Okay, are you ready, Andrew? You know it all already. Okay, we're on. You finished chapter 14 and 15, right? You're now on chapter 16. Or did we finish? No, we got 15 next. I'll go ahead and give you chapter 16 here.
Yeah, you gave it 15.
Yeah, you got 15. You should have 15. 14, 15. 16. Romeo, I'll have to get you the previous chapters.
Thank you.
So don't leave until you do that. So you stay so I can run. I'm sorry, did I give you... Did I miss one?
No.
Those are hers. Okay. All right.
Hopefully I didn't mix them up.
Who's got too much sugar and who doesn't? All right, let's see. Does everybody have a chapter 15? And then I just gave you chapter 16. Okay, we're going to start to go into the deep end now. Okay, while he's getting his cup of tea there, I'm going to ask that you grab your pair of scissors, okay? And you need to cut these out and put them in an envelope. There's an envelope right there.
Thank you.
Everybody needs an envelope and a pair of scissors.
Everything you.
Sorry? Cut all the squares out. Yeah. Yeah, so you're cutting. So cut down here and then cut across, or you can cut across there as well. But you want to have all of these cut out. It's kind of fun. Fairly quickly. Here you go. Then put them in your envelope. And
I got one.
Okay. Put them in your envelope. Basically, you're saying these are the major events of Revelation that you've got to ultimately, like a puzzle, put in place.
Craft class.
Yes, Killian should have been here.
He'd have a lot of fun today.
All right. I'll let you guys do that real quick. I'll pause this until you're finished. What I've given you is a pile of... Now look at them. Take a look at some of them. And just read off a couple of them to yourselves and see what they say. And I want you to see that now you need to grab you one of these pages. Okay. I know your space around your desk is slowly shrinking. All right, now you're not going to put anything on here now. You're actually going to draw on it. But I'm going to show you. I want you to create a timeline. And I want on that timeline for you to draw about 2/3 of the way down the page. This is your page up here. 2/3 of the page, draw a line across it with an arrow on the right-hand side. Up at the top of the page, put events of Revelation.
From end to end?
From almost end to almost end, yes. From side to side. And what you're going to do is, you're going to try to place all of those little cutout pieces in place on your page. Now, my recommendation is, you'll do this once, but then you'll decide, I need more length. I need this to go 2 times. So that'll be for next time. But right now, so draw across from about here. Draw a line across there. So what you're doing is you're recreating my page on your page. Okay? Then I want you to take your bits of paper and say, all right, here. I'll pick up hers. She's got one that says the 70th week of Daniel 9. Where does that go on the paper? Where is the 70th week? Then she's got another one that says the 69 weeks also of Daniel 9. Now, I didn't give scriptures on all of these. Another one says the seven churches. So, when you start to place... So, let's just let's play with... Hannah's said here. I just pick one. It says this: the judgment seat of Christ. Where would I put that? Do I put the judgment seat of Christ here? Mm-hmm. Oh, maybe it's at the end. Okay, put an arrow here. Mm-hmm. Okay. So I'll put the judgment seat of Christ at the end. Now it's kind of like a puzzle. Mm-hmm. Where is the abomination of desolation? Mm-hmm. Ah, okay, so draw a line there in the middle. And say, okay, she says there, because she's been paying attention to Pastor. Where's the marriage supper of the Lamb? Is that after the judgment seat of Christ, or is it before? Is it the same time? Same time, all right. Where's the tribulation? Okay. And then where's the... rapture, the catching away. Where is the rapture of the church? Okay. And then where's the great tribulation? Okay, you're going to put that there? All right. Now what you're doing is, you're trying to place them. Now just experiment first. We're going to work on this in time. And then you're going to find out this is going to become very full. But this is what most people do not do when they come to the book of Revelation. They never take time to cut out the bits and pieces of the events of the book of Revelation. Now, I've given you only like, I think there's only like 70 or 80 events. There are 300 events that are described in the book of Revelation. 300 of them. You'd never be able to fit them all on one page. So I've given you about 80 big time ones. And what's important is when you start to lay these out, and then when you start to look at the book of Revelation, you find, oh, the marriage supper of the Lamb is not, it doesn't fit, say, I don't really want to tell you, at the end, it has to go, and you'll find yourself moving it. And then you have all the different judgments. In this period of time called the Daniel 70th week. So you have one here called Daniel 70th week, wherever it went on.
We got two abominations and desolation.
That was an accident.
Okay. Which one do you want us to keep?
The one that you find on the bottom. I don't care.
Like.
Which one do you want us to go to the back of the class? He is an annoying. He's an annoying guy. All right. Where would you put, let me ask you this, where would you put the 69 weeks of Revelation, of Daniel?
Before tribulation.
Before.
Yeah.
You have to put that. Now all of a sudden, boom, it's going off the page. Where are you going to put the seven churches? They have to be the 69 weeks of Daniel. Actually, has to be. If I could be already ahead, the 69 weeks have to be before the seven churches. Because it says 69 weeks of Daniel relate only to Israel. So where would you put God's two witnesses killed by the Antichrist? Where were they killed? Right in the middle here, the abomination of desolation. All right, so that's my point. I want to show you that we normally work on, let me show you here, we normally work on a timeline, and we usually start and finish, and we say it's 7 years long. And this thing is called the 70th week of Daniel 9. It's when we say the 70th week, that means that there was a prophecy back in Daniel chapter 9 that says there were going to be 69 weeks of years, which is actually 483 years leading up to until Christ. And those 483 years all happened way back there at the birth of Jesus, and then his coming into Jerusalem and being announced as the Messiah, so on and so forth. Then we had a period of time where there have been churches ever since Matthew chapter 18. So I'm telling you, when you start to look at the book of Revelation, look at where we're looking. We're not only talking about 7 years, are we?
No.
We're talking about a plan that goes way back. Now, I'm sorry, Romeo, you're coming in, jumping in deep into the deep end. I understand. Now, when you get into the 70 years, we know that there are two halves of the 7 years, aren't there? Mm-hmm. We know that there's a 3.5 year part and then another 3.5 year. So we usually divide the 7 years into two compartments, two blocks of 3.5 years. Okay? And as you start to put the pieces into place, it's like a puzzle.
Yeah.
Okay? And let me tell you, sometimes the puzzle pieces don't fit. And you've got to take time to allow yourself to move things around. What has happened in 21st century Christianity is there has been a huge shift away from understanding Revelation, and people are imposing, they're forcing pieces of the puzzle that don't belong together. So they're putting pieces . This piece doesn't go with that. But they're squishing pieces together and saying, yes, they do. And they're not. Okay? So they're trying to make the church go through the tribulation. They're trying to make everything fit their understanding. And don't do that. So that's the purpose of this. Now, I know you're having fun, but I have to get back to the lesson. Yeah. We'll actually work some more on this. So put all the pieces back together. What I recommend you do. All right? You ready? Is get you this. Get you some white tack. And put little dabs of it behind each so that you can place it somewhere and then pick it up and move it when you find out that you were wrong. Okay, instead of gluing them down. Alright, right now you're going to want to just put all of your pieces back in there and make sure that you label them as the events of Revelation. And you can even fold this up and put that in there. It's not important. You can always, we got plenty of this paper. You can always get this A3 size paper, and you can glue two of them together, which I start to recommend now. I wanted you to see, this is a big thing. Most people have never done what I'm getting you to do. And so most people only believe what they read in a book about the book of Revelation instead of, you know, I need to figure this out myself. Okay? All right. So let's go into Revelation chapter 15. And then we'll try to get into chapter 16 as far as we can and start to deal with some issues here. Revelation chapter 15, as you put those things away. Put away your toys, will you? Thank you.
Revelation chapter 15.
All right, 15 is a very short chapter. Notice how short it is. It's just 8 verses long. And really, it's just an introduction to chapter 16. So these are the preparation for the 7 last plagues. And here comes some more signs in heaven. Look at chapter 15, verse 1. It says, "And I saw another sign in heaven, great and marvelous. 7 angels having the 7 last plagues, for in them is filled up the wrath of God." So, notice the emphasis on visible, verifiable signs being made to validate God's involvement in all the judgments of this world. Many people always explain away these events. Say if an asteroid comes along and strikes the earth, and they are terrified of it. They'll go, "Well, we were expecting it." I don't care whether you're expecting it or not. The Bible predicted it. The Bible gave it as a sign that God was, he predicted it, so it proves that God is there. But they will say that that's part of evolution, is part of nature, and so on. But God, and I just use these phrases, God signs these events with his signature, and his signature is prophecy. So that you know without a shadow of doubt who is behind all the trouble. So these are all things described, and all the miracles prove that there's a God. Now here in chapter 15 begins the introduction to the 7 last plagues. These plagues are described as, "For in them is filled up the wrath of God." Now this is the last trip to the tribulation. I want to give you this now. I gave you this not so that I could... I do not show you where each one of these events are particularly on purpose, because I want to help you see that. But generally, now this is already in a previous, last semester's lesson, but if you notice on your page, what do you start out with here on the far left? What is that blue column? What are they?
Seven churches.
All right, so we start off with the 7 churches. I am pre-tribulational, which means that we have the churches gone at the beginning of the tribulation. Then this orange, reddish-orange bar here is filled with 7 seals, 7 trumpets, 7 persons, and 7 vials. Just like you got Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John going through the life of Jesus, you have the 7 seals, the 7 trumpets, the 7 persons, 7 vials, all going through the tribulation, each one going through a different time. So you have the 7 seals. Name me a seal. Look in there and tell me a seal. Name me a seal event.
The white horse.
The white horse, the red horse, the pale horse, the black horse. These are events that occur because of a seal being removed off of a document in heaven. But that thing runs you through a series of events, and then you start over again, and you have the 7 trumpets, don't you?
Yes.
Okay, what chapters do the seals occur in, Jennifer?
6 or 8.
All right, so they are chapters 6 through 8. The trumpets take you again through the tribulation, and they are chapters what?
8 through 11.
Okay, the end of 8 through 11. Now, normally, people think that there are 7 seals, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, followed by 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 trumpets, followed by, and then they always skip the 7 persons, but they run to 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 vials or bowls. My ink is going. And seals. Almost all diagrams about the tribulation show you 7 seal judgments, followed by the 7 trumpets, followed by the 7 vials, ending with the Armageddon. And I'm trying to get you to understand, how about thinking outside of the box and realizing that maybe the seven people of the Revelation are not following the seven trumpets, but they are all describing the events of the entire period of time called the Book of Revelation. They're talking about the entire time. The seven trumpets are talking about a period of time in the tribulation. The seven seals are talking about a length of time during the tribulation, the last one being seven vials. In those, running to the end. The reason why we know, and you can mark it down, you know this to be true, the reason why we know that each one of these things are operating at the same time, at least similar, is because they all seem to finish with a unique way of ending. Do you notice on the far right, mm-hmm. you have the seventh last seal is silence. That's a strange seal. Judgment? That doesn't seem like much of a judgment, does it? Then the seventh last trumpet is called the last trumpet. Then the seventh person is just the image of the beast, and he's doing nothing. And the last one, the last vial, do you know what the last vial, when they pour it out, guess what heaven declares? It is done. It's as if all of these things are occurring not in sequence but simultaneously, and they all end at one event just before Armageddon. All before the great battle of the day of the Lord. So, and I'm just trying to give you some thoughts. I'm not trying to show you a chart that is exact, because I want you to see some of that yourself. Alright, so let's look at the seven angels. There's another sign in heaven. Evidently, people are able to look and see these things. John is able to look and see these seven angels as they're getting ready to judge the earth. And these last plagues are full of the wrath of God. These are serious disasters. Number B, notice the sea of glass in verse 2. And I saw, as it were, a sea of glass mingled with fire. And them that had gotten the victory over the beast, and over the image, and over his mark, and over the number of his name, stand on the sea of glass, having the harps of God. So, Andrew, what is the sea of glass?
Before the throne of God, right?
Mm-hmm. So it's in heaven.
It
comes from the Old Testament use of the brazen laver. It had water in it. What were we going to say, Romeo?
The thing is, first is the air, back into the heaven, is it?
Okay.
First is the air, next is space, and next is the heaven.
And there is a layer, of something that looks like glass, and I'm guessing it's frozen water. I don't know how to understand it technically, scientifically, but the sea of glass in the temple, in the tabernacle, before you went into the holy place and in the Holy of Holies, you had a brass laver, and it was filled with water. And the high priest would walk in and have to dip his feet in there and wash his feet before he stepped out, dried them off, and went into the Holy of Holies, okay? So, into the holy place. Now, this sea of glass is evidently a huge, I'm just going to draw a big platform. These people are standing on it. It says, and they were, look what it says. In verse 2 it goes and it says, and so as were a sea of glass mingled with fire. Now, I think there's just light, just active. I don't know where the light's coming from. I don't think the glass is burning, but I'm not sure. And them that had gotten the victory over the beast, over his image, and over his mark, and over the number of his name, were standing on the sea of glass. So they're all standing on this sea of glass. The center of the sea of glass is the throne of God. Okay? And this, all of these people
are what? Where did they come from? Yvonne.
You just read it there. Mm. I saw as it were a sea of glass mingled with fire, and them that had gotten the victory over who?
Beast.
And over his?
Beast.
Over his mark, and over the number of his name, and they were standing on the sea of glass having harps of God. So these were people in the tribulation who were killed. So where do you put this event? Is it at the beginning? There's no beast. There's no image of the beast. There's no number, no mark yet. That happens in the last half. So these guys, when the seven trumpets occur, are after the middle of the tribulation. You see how you're now figuring out the pieces of the puzzle? So they're all starting these seven trumpets are all occurring rapidly, I think, sometime after the middle of the tribulation. So we got the middle. We know that the Antichrist takes power here.
Pastor, I think you mean
vial. Did I say trumpets? Are we on vial or trumpets?
We're on vials.
We're on the vials, thank you. On the vials. We know that the Antichrist, the beast, sets up his power and his kingdom in the middle of the tribulation. He finally gets power. He's a man of peace at the beginning, and then he takes power. So this event, Revelation chapter 15 on, happens in this section, this last 3.5 years, and probably the last half of the last half of the tribulation. So you'll have seven events occurring very rapidly towards the end of the tribulation. Okay? They don't occur at the beginning. So my chart that I showed you there is not giving you the exact timing. I want you to see that these guys are dead. There's a slaughter of believers. Yana, are there any believers in the first 3.5 years of the tribulation? Are there any people who are believers in the first half of the tribulation? There's not. All the believers have gone up. And so when you read of two witnesses, who are they? Moses and Elijah. All you have are two. Is that hard? It's a one-syllable word. Two. There are only two in the entire world. And the world rejoices. Nobody loves what they hear them say. Nobody responds to it. Nobody gets saved. There are no believers. So these believers who are slaughtered have to be in this second half. There's no martyrdom of believers in the first half. There's nothing but sheer martyrs being slaughtered in the second half. So there's a sea of glass. Number three now. Listen to the song of heaven. They've got harps in their hand. I guess we're all going to learn instruments when we get to heaven, maybe. Do you know what a piano is? I remember learning this. A piano is a harp on its side. And you're just striking the bottom. You're just striking a harp on its side, and you're just striking the harp pieces. It's got more strings than a normal harp, but that's a stringed instrument like a harp on its side. Verse 3, and they sing the song of Moses, the servant of God, and the song of the Lamb. Song of Moses, Old Testament. Song of the Lamb, New Testament, saying, great and marvelous are thy works, Lord God Almighty. Just and true are thy ways, thou King of saints. Who shall not fear thee, O Lord, and glorify thy name? For thou art holy. For all nations shall come and worship before thee, for thy judgments are made manifest. So this is a two-verse song. Verse 3 and verse 4, there's the song of heaven. Now, I have not heard more than one harp at a time. You ever heard an orchestra of harps? That'd be something to hear. How do you write music for a harp, you know? How do you write music for a bunch of them? Well, in heaven, it must be amazing to hear thousands of harps all playing in unison. And then they sing the song of Moses. What was the song of Moses, Jennifer?
Deliverance from Egypt.
And what's the song of the Lamb? Good. Both are testimonies of salvation. What's the best songs to sing?
About Christ.
About being saved. Mm-hmm. Amen. All right. So, and look at what they're saying. In heaven, they're saying, God, you are right. God, your judgments are right. Even sending people to hell and judging the world for their sin is right. And you'll be singing that song. That's a hard song to sing. But you know, during world war, just wars, you've got to be able to say, wow, Germany's defeated. Amen. And they sang that Japan was defeated. They sang because the enemy was defeated. So these people are singing like only you could sing if you've been saved. Verse number D, look at the sanctuary, the temple in heaven. Verse 5, and after that I looked and behold, the temple of the tabernacle of the testimony in heaven was opened. So where was this temple?
Mm-hmm.
In heaven. Mm-hmm. And the seven angels came out of the temple, having the seven plagues, clothed in pure and white linen, and having their breasts girded with golden girdles. Now, what's a girdle?
Belt.
Thankfully, it's just a belt. Now, during the Elizabethan age, girdles became very popular as a weight reduction to give the impression that girls were really skinny. But that's not what it is. It's basically a wrap around your waist, like a belt might be today in a small way. But these were golden girdles, so they're in white with golden sashes around their waist. Verse 7, one of the four beasts gave unto the seven angels seven golden vials full of the wrath of God, who liveth forever and ever. And the temple was filled with smoke from the glory of God and from his power. And no man was able to enter in the temple till the seven plagues of the seven angels were fulfilled. So here, we're in heaven. And we read back in chapter 11 that the ark was in heaven. The ark that everybody's still looking for. Last time it was seen was in 2 Chronicles 35 under Josiah when he was reigning. And Jeremiah mentions it being taken out of mind in Jeremiah 3, which is crazy. Why? I thought, you know, maybe Jeremiah, they say that Jeremiah might have hidden the ark. Maybe Solomon hid it, or who knows what. Well, I think it got raptured. I think it got taken all the way up to heaven. And we're going to see the literal ark of Moses up there. But that's just an idea. Number 2, the seven angels come out of the temple having seven golden girdles. They're a type of Aaron and how they were dressed. The seven vials were full of the wrath of God. They're actually containers holding the judgments of God. And God's glory and power always produces smoke. What did they call it, Andrew, in the Old Testament when the glory of God appeared? In the tabernacle and later in the temple. Yeah, but it appeared as a cloud. Okay. So this cloud wasn't just a misty cloud, it was a smoky cloud. When God appeared, his presence was felt on Mount Sinai, what was Mount Sinai covered in? A cloud. Okay.
It was a dark cloud.
It was a dark cloud. And that was to protect us from his light, to see the image, or not the image, but the presence of God. So you're looking at this smoke here, and no man was able to enter in the temple until the wrath was completely poured out. And it's just been shut off for a time. Now, for the fourth and final time, the reader is going to go through the tribulation period with these last plagues. By now, the student of the Word of God should be familiar with the events that are about to occur and the reasons for them. Remember, the Lord has his life, death, and burial, and resurrection told four different times to four different writers, eyewitness writers, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. And so the same thing is happening with each one of these four. We had better heed or care about the message. This world is headed for judgment and is not ready. And the only escape is found in Jesus Christ. Hebrews 2:3 says, how shall we escape if we neglect so great salvation? We then should get the message out to those for whom it is intended. Now let's go to the seven last plagues. Here we are. We're in chapter 16, and try to get through this fairly rapidly. We have been through the tribulation now three times. We're about to go through it for the last time. I believe the Lord is attempting to impress upon man the seriousness of these future events by going over their consequences again and again. So if God repeats something, then we better know that it is important. So look at the judgment table. It's on your page, but it's also on here as well. You've got seven judgments. Does the white horse, look at the first column there, under seven seals, the white horse, the Antichrist, the false peace. Do the seven trumpets occur at the same time? No. There's fire and hail. No, that doesn't happen. Is the first horse a woman? No. So, have you got the next book, the next chapter? You're on chapter 15 now. Chapter 16. I didn't give you 16?
Yeah.
Keep going. Chapter 16. Yeah, we're here. All right, so I'm going through here. I'm saying the white horse. If they're all happening simultaneously, you'd have there's a woman appearing, and the woman's not on the white horse. It says a man rides on a white horse. So the events of tribulation are all at different times. It's trying to figure out when they occur. You're given central things, but notice what is similar. Do you see a gap? Always present. There is always a delay, or I want to call it a gap. I'm trying to think of something else to call it. But you have all seven of the events, and then you have a gap before the last judgment. So you have all these judgments. You have six plagues. Then there's a gap where there's sort of something discussed, but it doesn't relate to the plagues. And then there's the seventh plague. And then there is the end of the tribulation, and you have the Battle of Armageddon following that. That's what you can see as a pattern here. You see a pattern of these six plagues, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. There's a gap, and then there's number seven. And then there's six seals, six trumpets, six different people, and then six vials, and then there's a gap. There's each chapter, the 144,000, there's the River Euphrates we're about to read about, and the 200 million coming into attack. And then there's the seventh judgment. It seems to always line up, but not in, like, this event is not occurring at the same time as the seven trumpets. And that's not appearing at the same time as the seven people do. So, I'm just getting you to open your eyes to see all the different events. They happen at different times. So it is true that there are several places where differences in judgments are apparent, but overall the pattern is the same. You have the same number of judgments, you have the same type and character of the judgments, the time element being similar, and the seventh judgment in all four sequences aren't really judgments at all, but signify the end of the tribulation every time. Now, one thought about these last plagues is that they probably are judgments that occur primarily in the last half of the tribulation, after people take the mark of the beast, and they relate to the great tribulation. Now, look at your next chart. Oh, here we go. The next chart has got three ideas of the tribulation. There's four, sorry. Yeah, there's a unique one. I put two of them together. Three, one half, thanks. Okay. Christians today should be, as I've read the Bible, looking for what's called a pre-trib rapture. What does that mean, Yvonne? Pre-trib means what?
before the tribulation.
Good. So pre means before the tribulation, the rapture. There are people who, they're not very popular today, but they were really big in the 70s and 80s. They believed in a mid-trib rapture. Mid meaning that it's in the middle of the tribulation, all the believers go up. Now that would imply that Christians continue on until the Antichrist shows himself on the throne in Jerusalem. Then there's two more groups. There is a group that says that there's a rapture right at the very end, and they're called the post-trib. And in English, what do you think that means, Yana? Post-trib.
After
all the events of the tribulation, just before the battle of Armageddon, and everybody's killed there almost, we're all pulled away. And that implies that Christians continue on all the way through until the very end. Then in the late 70s, there's a guy named Marv Rosenthal who developed something called the pre-wrath rapture. And he said, all right, let's come back just a little bit. And he's got Christians going up pre-wrath rapture. And then what happens is after all the Christians go, then there is the wrath of God poured out. And those are those trumpets. Anybody? I have to race. Trumpets. How many vials are there? All right. In the pre-wrath rapture, they believe that we Christians are called up to heaven at the last trumpet. So how many trumpets are there? Seven, right?
Yeah.
So at the last trumpet. And so their idea is that there are trumpets here, 3, 4, 5, 6, and then at the seventh trumpet, we go up. Then the seven vials are poured out. Okay? That's what they are focusing on. That's what they believe and they think is happening. So let's go on through here. Now there's a guy named Clarence Larkin who wrote a tremendous book on the tribulation, wrote another book on the book of Revelation, and another book called Dispensational Truth that you can get this from. And his charts are fantastic. So I'll give you an illustration of one of them where he starts with Daniel 70 week. And he shows everything in timeline, like what I'm showing you. Like what most people believe and stuff. And it can make sense until you start to look for some particular things like the rapture. And some people get very confused as when are we going up? But let me show you these seven last plagues, and I want to show you how this works. Chapter 16 and verse 1. And I heard a great voice out of the temple saying to the seven angels, go your ways and pour out the vials of the wrath of God upon the earth. The first went and poured out his vial upon the earth, and there fell a noisome and grievous sore upon the men which had the mark of the beast and upon them which worshipped his image. The second angel poured out his vial upon the sea, and it became as the blood of a dead man. Every living thing died in the sea. The third angel poured out his vial upon the rivers and fountains of water, and they became blood. I heard the angel of the waters say, thou art righteous, O Lord, which art, and wast, and shalt be, because thou hast judged thus. For they have shed the blood of saints and prophets, and thou hast given them blood to drink, for they are worthy. I heard another out of the altar say, even so, Lord God Almighty, true and righteous are thy judgments. So each one of these angels is saying, this is right to do, this is right to do. When they dropped the atomic bomb on Hiroshima and Nagasaki, was that a right thing to do? What do you think? What do you think? The bomb that killed, the two bombs that killed well over 150,000 people there in Japan.
At the time, it was right, because they're not able to overcome the world war.
And the culture of the Japanese was they were not going to quit. Did you know what the Japanese were doing in 1945? They were building wooden airplanes, and they put a metal tank in there full of petrol. Mm-hmm. Not so they could fly long distances, but so they could fly into ships, Navy ships, and kamikaze. And that was the last. They just kept throwing people, and they loaded up wooden airplanes because they couldn't manufacture steel anymore. All of their steel manufacturing was bombed and destroyed. So they kept making wooden airplanes to fly in as bombs. They weren't going to quit. So they made a decision, the American government made a decision, to drop two bombs. I wasn't there. I've read all kinds of different things. Why drop two? I don't know. But they also, you got to understand their culture. The Japanese, their emperor to them was God. And it was impossible for them to think he had made a mistake when he declared war on America and on China. And so for him, when he got on the radio, after both of those bombs went off, he got on the radio and he was forced to admit, I am not God, I am only a man, and I was wrong, and we are surrendering. And when the Japanese heard that, they stopped fighting. But it took two bombs to do that. Now, would I have dropped two bombs? Probably not. But I wasn't there.
They dropped a bomb in India on Japanese radio flying. I heard this, but it was the World War.
They dropped a bomb where?
In India.
What bomb was that?
People said it was a big bomb dropped in India. A big sound was there.
It might have been a big bomb. I hope it wasn't a nuclear bomb. I never thought that might have been
the ordinary bomb in the flight they dropped in India.
Oh.
Immediately, Americans went and crashed everywhere.
You know, there were a lot of bombs dropped all over the world, I know. But the idea is, at some point, you got to say, this judgment is right. And that's what these angels are saying here. Over and over, they're repeating. Verse 8 now. The fourth angel poured out his vial upon the sun, and power was given unto him to scorch men with fire. So it's kind of like putting fuel on a fire, and the sun got brighter. And men were scorched with great heat, and they blaspheme the name of God. Isn't that what happens when somebody gets hurt? What do they do when somebody stubs their toe? What do people do?
They curse God.
Oh my goodness, I saw a sign one time. I thought it was brilliant. This guy says, keep damning the traffic, I'm going to make it worse. And sign God. You know, you're in the traffic and people say, God this, God damn. That's what Americans do. And God, and somebody put up there, keep damning the traffic, I'll keep making it worse. I thought it was kind of cute. But they blasting the name of God when they started to get burned, which had power over these plagues, and they repented not to give him glory. They should have repented, but instead they blamed God. And the fifth angel poured out his vial upon the seat of the beast, and his kingdom was full of darkness, and they gnawed their tongues for pain. And they blasphemed the God of heaven again, because of their pains and their sores, and repented not of their deeds. The sixth angel poured out his vial upon the great river Euphrates, and the water thereof was dried up, and the way of the kings of the east might be prepared. And I saw three unclean spirits like frogs come out of the mouth of the dragon, and out of the mouth of the beast, and out of the mouth of the false prophet. For these are the spirits of devils, working miracles, which go forth unto the kings of the earth and to the whole world to gather them to the battle of that great day of God Almighty. Behold, I come as a thief. Blessed is he that watcheth and keepeth his garments, lest he walk naked and they see his shame. And he gathered them together into a place called in the Hebrew tongue. What is it? There's Armageddon. The seventh angel poured out his vial into the air, and there came a great voice out of the temple of heaven from the throne, saying, it is done. So when the seventh vial is poured out, there's no judgment. It just says, it is done. And there were voices and thunders and lightnings. There was a great earthquake, such as was not since men were upon the earth, so mighty an earthquake and so great. So there's our judgment. And the great city was divided into three parts, and the cities of the nations fell. And great Babylon came in remembrance before God, to give unto her the cup of the wine of the fierceness of his wrath. And every island fled away, and the mountains were not found. And there fell upon men a great hail out of heaven, every stone about the weight of a talent. Now a talent, like, I can't remember how much is a talent weight. We're talking several pounds each. And men blaspheme God because of the plague of the hail, for the plague thereof was exceeding great. The largest hail I think that's ever been recorded was the size of a small, we call them softballs. What were they? Be three times the size of a slitter ball here, tennis ball. Take four tennis balls, but it would weigh like 10 pounds. What kind of damage would a 10-pound hail do to your car? What would it do to your roof? Where am I here? Was that the end?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, okay. So, quickly. The first vial, a noisome and grievous sore. The commands for these angels are to go their ways, start pouring out their vial, and a vial is a small bottle, like a perfume bottle with a long neck. And the church is not on the earth, definitely because God has not appointed us to wrath. So there's no way there'd be any Christians. So it's how come post-tribulation can't be true. And most everybody's agreed with that by now. Most everybody says, this thing doesn't work. Okay. As a matter of fact, most people now, when they come to the Bible, they say, this thing doesn't work. Nobody seems to go up with the two witnesses. So it's either here or it's here. Because here it says, all the wrath of God is poured out in these vials, and Christians aren't appointed to wrath. So, Marv Rosenthal says, okay, we go up before the wrath of God. All right, let's keep going. Number four, the noisome and grievous sore evidently goes on all those who have received the mark of the beast. So these plagues definitely occur after the first half of the tribulation. Now, when you want to determine the time element, you got to know that the beast shows up. When the beast shows up, he is finally given power by speaking great blasphemy, and he reigns for 42 months. That's Revelation 13. The rebuilt temple will be trodden underfoot by the Gentiles in the last half of the tribulation for 42 months. Israel will be saved in a day when the abomination of desolation of the temple takes place, and will have to flee to the wilderness and there and running for 42 months, the last 42 months. So noisome means painful. You ever had something where you just, oh, ow, like maybe you're getting a back rub and they push on a part that hurts and you go, oh, that hurt. That's a noisome pain. Well, this is a noisome sore. It just makes everybody moan. B, the second vial, where the sea is turned into blood. Remember how Moses turned the water into blood? Well, his work is active. He was doing that here, but now this is happening all over the world. Every living soul dies in the sea. This statement with Numbers 31 proves that animals have souls, but the souls of animals are not the same as that of humans, and that they are not immortal. Again, they're just thoughts here. Number C, the third vial. Rivers become blood. Every bit of water on this earth becomes blood, as the blood of dead men. What did they do in Egypt when the rivers turned to blood? Where did they look for water?
In the wells.
Well, they started digging new wells. They had to go down into the ground because a river was turned to blood. I don't know. This is how come so many people die during the tribulation. People won't be able to find water. How long can you go without water? I think the maximum going without water is like 4 days. So these are going to be desperate people. Now, blood has a definite way of stinking. And can you imagine what it's going to stink like? It will stink as the blood of dead men. It doesn't get washed off because they can't find any water. So here in this plague, even the water that could wash off the blood is contaminated. In the words, they are worthy. Tell immediately what God thought about the situation, as if to say, they deserve it. Number D, the fourth vial. The sun novas. Now what that nova means, it changes. It becomes brighter. And there are stars, they'll be watching with astronomy, and they'll see a star become much brighter. They call it a nova. Who knows what a supernova is?
When it explodes, isn't it?
Yeah, and it becomes... The one star becomes as bright as an entire galaxy. That's how much power is in a star. Not all stars, but some stars, when they do become unstable and they explode, they become so bright, they become the brightness of an entire galaxy. Now, this one just becomes brighter. if you notice, look in Isaiah chapter 30. Let's look in Isaiah chapter 30. And Yvonne, would you read verse 26? Start in verse, let me tell you, start in verse 25. I want you to see the context of this verse. 25 and 26, Isaiah 30.
And there shall be upon every high mountain and upon every high hill rivers and streams of waters in the day of the great slaughter, when the towers fall.
Okay, so there's going to come a time, it's called the great slaughter. Towers are going to fall. Some people thought that that was referring to the World Trade Center. Mm-hmm. But anyway, verse 26.
Moreover, the light of the moon shall be as the light of the sun. The light of the sun shall be sevenfold, as the light of 7 days in the day that the Lord findeth of the breach of his people, and healeth the stroke of their wound.
Okay, so there's going to come a time where the moon is going to become as bright as the sun. You go out at night and there's no night. It's pure day. And the sun becomes what? Seven times brighter. It's you'll get 7 days worth of sunlight in one day. How do you think people will go tanning on those days? You're out in the sun for 20 minutes and, Mom, I'm burnt! Yeah, you look red as a chili pepper. So we're dealing with a period of time that's at the time that God's trying to heal who? Who is God trying to heal? Israel. What is the tribulation, Jennifer? It's primarily trying to get who right with God?
The Jews.
The Jews. It's not for Christians. The whole purpose of all of these events is to save Israel. And Israel is saved in the tribulation.
During this time, you already said that 144,000 would be, is this when they would be up?
They're already freely moving around and they're winning Gentiles.
So they are during this time.
Well, I'm not sure. Remember, there is a rapture of the 144,000. We know that because they seem to go up before. We saw them go up. I don't know where they go up. And nobody's ever been. They may go up in this type of scenario. We just know that they're in heaven. Mm-hmm. Okay? So, but there are still Jews here because Jerusalem is surrounded and it's about to be slaughtered. And Israel has fled into the wilderness for 42 months, and they're being fed by manna. All the different things that are going on.
So there are still people that do get saved during this time.
Yes.
During
these even then. Mm-hmm. But there are plenty of people who don't.
Right.
So, run down to number E. The fifth vial. Then, as soon as that sun novus, then it goes dark. Look back there in verse 10. Revelation 16:10. And the fifth angel poured out his vial upon the seat of the beast, and his kingdom now was full of darkness, and they gnawed their tongues for pain, and they blasphemed. So what a contrast. First, it's too bright, it's too sunny, it's too much radiation, and then all of a sudden, darkness. Let's see, gnawing of tongues. Why would somebody chew on their tongue?
Very sore.
If you chewed on your tongue, you'd be very sore. But why would you chew on your tongue in darkness?
Scared?
I wouldn't call it fear. I don't see fear there. I've known people who have hurt themselves, cut themselves. They have tried to create pain. Do you know why? Because they don't feel anything. And when they're chewing on their tongues, they're trying to, am I alive? There's so much happening. The only thing that helps them to focus on step out of the just a complete numbness that they feel is to have pain. And they're chewing on their tongues so that they will feel pain. Because that at least lets them know, all right, I'm still alive. And this is how numb they are to everything going around. You ever said, maybe you've known somebody and they've You've just seen them switch off because maybe someone had death in the family, disaster, they just lost their job. And what do? They just sit there and like, and they're numb. Okay, well, in order to deal with that, they're gnawing their tongues. That's just how desperate they are. Now, it falls on the seat of the beast, which happens to be Rome, but we'll focus on that when we get to chapter 17 and 18. The sixth vial has the Euphrates River drying up. We've seen the Euphrates talked about in Revelation chapter 9. Now we're focusing on them again. And the kings of the east are usually associated with the Chaldeans and Babylon, but may refer to people even further east, like the Chinese, the Hindu, and the Russians, which seem to be getting involved in Syria right now.
Mm.
The main thrust of the plague is the preparation for the final conflict in the tribulation called Armageddon. God opens up the way for Satan's army to go right across this riverbed on dry ground. So anybody see the river Euphrates on your map?
Mm-hmm.
All right, use your pen and draw the length of that river. It's a very long, very big river. It's very instrumental in Iraq, you know, being able to survive because it's a desert without it. Look at all the antitypes of the Holy Trinity of God that are sent forth to deceive. The Holy Spirit is like a dove, but the unclean spirit is like a frog, and he's the false prophet. God the Father is a spirit, and Satan is called a dragon. God the Son is called a lamb, and the Antichrist is referred to as a beast. Now these three spirits that come out of the false prophet, the beast, and the dragon, they work miracles. They heal, they raise the dead, and the Christians should be ultra careful when dealing with those who trust miracles more than they trust God. I have known this. I'll be very plain. Christians who believe in the miracles are in the healings and raising the dead are opening themselves up to demonic spirits, and they don't realize it. And they're opening up their homes, they're opening up their families to demonic possession. So be very careful about being around these healing ceremonies and things because they're very demonic. Now Jesus is coming soon at this point. Now he's still coming as a thief. He'll come when the world doesn't expect him. And notice how that all the nations are gathered together there at the end. At the end of chapter 16 here, you've got on the end of where are we here? Let's read verse 17. The seventh angel poured out his vial into the air, and there came a great voice. Oh no, I'm looking at verse 16. And he gathered them together in a place. I wonder who the he is. It's actually Jesus. Verse 15 says, "Behold, I come as a thief. Blessed is he that watcheth and keepeth his garments and walk, lest he walk naked and they see his shame," speaking to the Jews during the tribulation. "And he gathereth them together in a place called in Hebrew tongue Armageddon." So you've got the seventh vial coming along here in verse 17. This is the final event of the tribulation. There are voices, thunders, lightnings, and a great earthquake associated with this statement, "It is done." So the great earthquake follows an event that we know is a transfer of everybody in the world to the Battle of Armageddon. To the Battle of Armageddon. And it's associated with a massive earthquake. Even the islands are moved out of their place. I wonder if Ireland is going to sink. Ireland is a big enough island. Yeah, it's going to disappear.
The only prophecies they say.
Hmm?
Only these three of Ireland. And they say, they prophesize the island will be.
It'll be gone, yeah?
Gone. They can't see the kingdom of God.
No. Well, we need to get people off the island.
Yeah.
In the rapture and out of the way. So there are, 8 pounds each. A talent is 8 pounds. I got it there. Great hailstones weighing 8 pounds each. The people of earth are just right ahead, just go right ahead and blaspheme God Almighty. You ever seen anybody yelling at a judge after they've been sentenced in a courtroom? They get, "I'll get you." These people have no remorse. They don't care that they're being judged. and they don't get any sympathy. Now, throughout the tribulation, under the God of this world, people do not get better, they just get worse. But we've got two more chapters before the second coming of Jesus Christ. So, if I were to draw a line right here, what have we got? What chapters do we have before the second coming? All of the events of the tribulation occur from Revelation chapter 4 all the way through to chapter 18. And then in Revelation chapter 19, you have the Battle of Armageddon. So, even though it says it is done, it's the end of the tribulation, you still have two more chapters because it's going to go back and fill in some more holes, some more gaps. So your map is going to get so full of trying to feed in and squeeze in things between things. And I don't know what's, you know, how I would have written the book of Revelation, how anybody, it doesn't matter. When God wrote it, it's just so full of stuff, this is the only way to make full sense of it. And you will get confused. And some people really do. What is a way, Andrew, to help believe that we don't go up with 144,000? What is a way that helps a Christian understand that we're not part of the two witnesses going up?
Just like what chapter 11 says, but also Colossians 2, right? Or
how? What does that mean? Colossians 2, what does it say? Some things that help is that this is Daniel's 70th week.
Right.
Something that happens is it is always very Jewish. We have a temple. We have smoke in the temple. We have angels pouring out judgments on the earth relating to Israel, relating to the judgment and driving Israel first, driving them back to the land, building the temple, and then the Antichrist and his hatred towards Israel. Now he hates Christians as well. But everything seems to be Jewish. 144,000 Jews. Everything's Jewish. So that helps me. If I don't have some of that background information, when I come in there, it would sure make sense that we go up with 144,000. Sure makes sense that man, we're before the wrath. If you don't have some of that background information, that there were 69 weeks and then there was Jesus. And he was kind of a gap. And then we go into this period of time called the church. And then God's clock at the rapture starts again, and it's all Israel. It's Jacob's trouble.
Right.
Trying to get Israel saved in a day. The nation of Israel fleeing for 42 months. On and on and on and on. That's what helps us. And that's once you've got the background, that helps you interpret the pattern that you see in the book of Revelation. We did a lot today, I know. Any questions or any thoughts? It's overwhelming. Once you get to this thing, you've got to start, like your laces on your shoe, you've got to start tying them all up and wrapping it up because there's so many different pieces to put together. But next week, I'm going to challenge some of the places you're going to place some of your points. And you might want to have two pieces of paper. If you want to work at it during the week, I think you can have a lot of fun. And we'll try to figure out more next week. All right. Let's stand. Let's bow in prayer.